Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I am joined today by a dynamic duo of coaches from California, from St. John Bosco, the offensive coordinator, Stephen Lowe, and from Clovis High School, defensive coordinator, Chris Vassar. So, guys, it's great to have you both here on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start with each of you first, and we're going to kind of get the background and then talk about how you guys came together and some of the things that you've learned along the way and learned from each other. But, Chris, tell us a little bit about your start in coaching. I know from dialing your number that you are not a California guy originally. So talk to us a little bit about
your start. I grew up in Orlando, and I went to the University of Miami. And I was just a student, and I had this crazy idea that I wanted to get into college football coaching. And I kind of sat on it for about 6 months. I didn't really tell anybody. And I told a friend of mine, Anthony Brannon, who was a walk-on at Notre Dame. He goes, "You'd be perfect. It'd be great." I'm like, "Yeah, well, except for that I have no experience." So I'd worked at camps, non-football camps, and I loved working with high school age kids and with the college age kids. And I loved the game. So we had a class at the University of Miami. It was called the Sport Industry in South Florida. And so we visited Miami football offices. I basically cornered the DFO there. And I said, "I want to meet about getting in the profession." He said, "Okay." We met. And he said, "I'll get back to you in a week." And he didn't. And so I called him, emailed him, and I showed up in person. I only showed up in person twice, but I called and emailed every day for 6 weeks. And at the end of it, it was kind of a game. Like, this guy's just going to tell me no. I'm going to make him tell me no. And so finally, he's just like, I got something for you. Just leave me the hell alone. So as my senior year, I went and worked with the video staff with Stu Kramer's at the Eagles. He's now the Colts. And he knew I was one of the only film guys that wanted to do to actually coach. Everybody else wanted to be in, filming the news or movies or whatever. So he let me just kind of hang out. And I parlayed that into I cold called about 40 schools. San Jose State offered me the best opportunity. So I graduated from Miami, packed my car, drove across the country, had no idea where San Jose was, showed up as a volunteer. And about a month into it, they put me on scholarship. I was the assistant video coordinator. And I basically did my duties as quickly as I could so I could go hang out with Keith Burns, who was the corners coach at the time. And Keith kind of took me under his wing. From there, him and Dave Fiff, who's actually now a special teams coach of the Eagles, I was frustrated one day, and I went into their office. And they're like, "You got to go coach. You just got to go coach. This video thing's not for you." So about the next day, I flew home and I got off the airplane and I had 4 missed calls from Keith and Dave, and so that was kind of peculiar because they don't call me usually. And it turned out Los Altos High School was looking for a coach. Coach Fiff just happened to be at the front desk, and he was joking around, answering phones, having a good time. And somebody's like, "Hey, we need high school coaches. Do you know of anybody?" And we had just talked the day before, and he's like, "Yeah, I know somebody." So I ended up at Los Altos. That kind of was. It was a good experience, but it just wasn't a good fit for me. So I left and I took a job at Gilroy High School. In Gilroy, we met on the infamous CoachHuey.com and met the head coach, Rich Hammond. And at that point, Steven, I guess this would be a good point for it to tag Steven in. Steven had just left. And so I was coming into the DC. He was the offensive line coach. He was going to go work at San Jose State as a GA in the strength program. And then he would still come to all the games and stuff, and so that's when we met.
Well, we'll tag you in here, Steven, and you bring us to the same point from your side.
Oh, yeah. So I originally went back to my alma mater and coached there as a position coach, as the offensive line coach, for about 5 years. And about that time, I wrapped up my undergrad and was heading off to grad school, and had a great opportunity at San Jose State to work under Chris Holder and the strength staff at San Jose State. And I jumped up to that opportunity and took it, and decided to step back off of high school for a 2 year period. And after I finished up, I realized, man, I love high school ball, and I want to work back, back in my alma mater. And that's kind of when I jumped back in with Chris, and we came on board, and that was one of our first of many stints together.
Yeah, you guys have
yeah,
been
we
together
cornered him
four times now, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, four times. So we worked together at Gilroy High School, at St. Francis, and at our last stop at Sarah High School in San Mateo. And then we spent one season actually coaching semi-pro football at our local semi-pro team in Gilroy, California.
Yeah. He had left, and we had Coach Hammond. So I did a year at Gilroy in 2008, and Coach Hammond left to come to Clovis. And the head coach, the guy that went for the head coaching job, talked me into coming back, because I wanted to come originally to Clovis, but it didn't work out. And so I was like, we need to get Steven back. He agreed. So we went out to a local watering hole. Steven had a drinker, but I think we basically cornered him in the parking lot. And I was going to say we stopped short of begging him, but after we got down on our knees and started begging him to come back.
Is that how it went, Steven?
I guess my foggy memory has it something like that. But, yeah, it sounds something similar to that.
Well, you guys have become friends and stayed close since then. As we mentioned, been at four different places, and I think that's just one of the examples of the power of this game, bringing people together. But you both, I've learned of you guys on the internet and read some stories about you, talked to some people about you, and well-respected in the game. But, as you've grown together as friends, and both of you opposite sides of the ball, so I'm sure there's always been that competition there too. How have you continued to grow professionally? What has this relationship done for you guys, and being able to learn from each other, as well as I know you guys go out and learn from other coaches as well.
Answer for the offensive side, I mean, there's multiple times within a season, a game week, an off season, where we just bounce ideas off each other. I take a look and, hey, this is something I'm looking at putting in. How would you guys defend it? What would give you guys problems? And we kind of, almost game plan, a lot of issues and things that, out of our, out of our systems, and take a look at where the holes were. And, he would see things from angles and from sides that I wouldn't, originally take a look at. And I think it's important for any staff to really, collaborate and work together, because I think you can get, a lot of the holes and a lot of your blind spots, taken care of, because, you have the opposite side of the ball attacking how they would attack it in a game week.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything he said. I mean, with the kind of willingness it was, Steve became the offensive coordinator in the middle of the season, and so he came over and he's like, let's put together a game plan. I've never done this before. And it's like a Sunday, and I ripped off all these books off my shelf. I'd never done it either. Let's figure it out. So we got a book. I got AFCA books. I got all sorts of different. We had a USA football book. Started pulling stuff out, going through it, figuring it out. And then we finished that season. And I actually left and went and coached junior college ball. Steven stayed behind. Then in 2011, he was the head coach at Gilroy. But some issues happened. And in 2011, I went off to Mississippi coaching college, and in 2012 I came back and I coached at St. Francis, and I begged, so I called Steve, I pitched the idea of me, I'm like, hey, I know you're a head coach at your alma mater, but I really think you should come coach D-line for me, a position you've never coached, a side of the ball that you've never coached. And so we talked for about 2.5 hours, and he was like, I can't. So the next day I'm like, I'm not going to take no for an answer. So I'm back in Florida, kind of just hanging out, waiting to take this job, and I call him. And I'm like, hey, man, I thought about it all day. I had all my points in a row. And I'm like, so anyway, Steve, we talked last night. And he just goes, I'm in. And I think this would be a great opportunity for you. I think this would be it. He's like, did you just hear me? I'm in. So he ended up coming coaching with me. And although he pretends that he hates coaching defense, I think he's really loves it. And so that was interesting, because we were across from each other. And then we actually coached on the same side of the ball together for a year. I think, I don't want to speak for Steven, but I think he learned a lot about how to attack a defense by seeing that side of the ball. And we worked together in semi-pro, and I would ask more questions because I was the head coach of the year. And so I never, you know, I let him do whatever he want, but I would ask questions because I was more curious. And I've learned a ton about offense from Steven. So I, for my money, I think Steven's one of the best offensive coordinators, if not the best in the country. And it really helps you. You don't have to go very far. You don't have to make many phone calls to be like, hey, what would you do to this? And we did a lot of, you know, and Swiss cheesing, as I call it, just trying to poke holes. And it was never, it was always from a place of, we're competitive, but we never were like trying to out to get each other and stuff. It was always from a positive place, I feel. You know, we're not into like ripping each other. That's not like our relationship. You know, like we're competitive, but it was always for the team. And I think we kept a really good perspective on that. We had good back and forth. It wasn't like there would be a day where, you know, we'd be really well on defense, but I'd be rooting for him even though I was the defensive coordinator. And I think he'd the other way around. Like when each of us did really well, the team did well. So we always kind of, and I think I really appreciate that the most about our competitive relationship was that, yeah, when we were 2 minute, he wanted to score and I wanted to keep him out of the end zone, but we liked the back and forth.
So Steven, stepping back a little bit here in that decision to go over and work with Chris and to go from, I believe, as he said, you were a head coach at the time and you became a defensive line coach. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I did.
What was the factor in, you know, cause that's not necessarily a traditional type of move. You know, making that decision and making that move.
I mean, well, you know, the shift from working at my alma mater to having the ability to jump into one of the tougher leagues in Northern California, that was really intriguing. Definitely jumping into the other side of the ball with my best friend and, you know, working together with him and learning from him, that was definitely intriguing. You know, most importantly, the situation that my alma mater didn't really work out. And, you know, career-wise, it was, you know, the best move for me was to move on and to start afresh. And what better way than to go to the dark side and go see what it's like over there on the defensive side of the ball.
That's right, the dark side.
Well, Steven, you know, we heard the story about you guys figuring out how to game plan, and I'm sure you have moved well beyond that. If you would, please share, I guess, your overall philosophy on game planning and how you're trying to put things together. What's the, I guess, the overriding philosophy for you?
I mean, the overall thing is, I mean, offensively, like a lot of people say, it's just, you know, how do we get our best pieces on you know, the best matchups that we can get in a given game week? You know, we take a look and we self-scout quite a bit. We take a look at what, you know, we're good at doing and, you know, our tendencies and whatnot. And then we shift the gears and take a look at our opponents and take a look at, you know, what are things that are giving them issues? You know, where do we have, you know, our matchups and where do we have areas that we want to attack? And, you know, that's where our game prep and, you know, the film that we look at and the cutups that we make, you know, gives into that information so we can plan our plan of attack.
And for you, Chris, learning from that process, obviously going beyond it from the defensive side and game planning, how do you put things together?
Well, the best thing I ever did, it was, and everybody that knows me, I spent a year, and I say a year, really a season at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi, and I worked for a guy named Brandon Lechtenberg, who's now at UIW, who's a freaking genius. And it was the worst and best 4 months of my life. I hated every second of it. I don't think I was mentally prepared for the college life, even though I'd already worked at three colleges. I think the move happened late July. It was just all a lot at once. I didn't have time to adjust. But going there, Brandon had worked for Gary Patterson, and he was just removed from TCU like 6 months before I got hired. And he had an interesting perspective because he worked with the line 1 year, the backers 1 year, and the secondary 1 year. And so we did, you know, it's his first year coordinating, so we did, you know, pretty much a lot of what Gary does, Coach P, and I do everything that everybody else does, you know, the cut-ups and you know, trying to make people play left-handed, and I'll spare you all that stuff that you've heard before. But I will tell you some of the stuff that I took away from that I've brought with me and still do to this day. The number one thing is, and I know people are going to be surprised by this or think I'm crazy, I don't start looking at down a distance until Tuesday or Wednesday. I could care less. We game plan personnel. And so on Mondays, a lot of people do like 9-on-7, 7-on-7 team. We go number one personnel group, number one personnel group, number two personnel group. And so because we feel that if we have a game plan that fits all of their stuff, and obviously as the week goes, we specialize. But what I found when I looked it down in distance too early was I called making boutique calls. Like, okay, here's our 2nd and 10 call. Mm-hmm. And we got too, it became too specialized and too, it was going off on a tangent. And I was trying to spend too much time trying to pick when a team does. Well, they're coaching too. So tendencies are great, but sometimes they can be used against you. And so I started looking at the holistic picture of the personnel groupings. And so for us, an average game week Monday, we rep their top personnel group. And it depends on the team, because we've played teams when we were at Sarah that they ran one personnel group. There's a School Valley Christian. They run 31 personnel almost every snap. But a typical team that runs 4 or 5 personnel groups will go personnel group one. We'll do 2 10-minute team periods, 11 on 11. We self-scout and we do 9-on-7 and 7-on-7. And then the number two personnel grouping. Then day two will be the number one personnel group review. And then the number one and number two, or number one, depending on how the percentages are, we run all their calls versus blitzes. And then the third period will be their number three, their number three top personnel group. And then Wednesday is when we get into situations. We do, because usually the auxiliary, the 4th and 5th personnel groups, and we played Team Sierra Canyon, we played in the state title game, they had 13 personnel groupings. So it changes week to week, but then we'll start worrying about down a distance. And we'll say, okay, we'll do a 15-minute team period of red zone and goal line and a 15-minute period of third down, third and short, all the way up to third and 25. Helps me game plan. And we tied in our game plan to how we practice. So I didn't start looking at third down until Tuesday night because it takes care of itself in the end. I know it sounds weird, but it takes care of itself. Another thing that we did that really helped, and this is a little bit outside of your question, but this might be the best game prep thing I've ever done, was, and this is, again, stolen from TCU, they do a thing called Purple Ball, and we've adapted it but basically what happens is our assistants write the script. I don't know what's coming. So I have to call the game on Thursday like I will on Friday. I have no idea what's coming. They'll say 1st and 10, negative 20-yard line, left hash, 21 personnel. And I have to make a call and get the defense lined up and everything. So I'm practicing for the game as well. And I'll tell my guys, hey, we do heavy trick plays. Some weeks, if it's a team I know really well, I'll write the whole script out and then say rearrange it so I don't know when what's coming. And so on Friday night, the first third down, it's not the first time I'm making that call, if right. That makes sense. I've already thought about some of those tough, and we cover every situation. We have a matrix, every field position, down a distance, backed up, yellow zone, red zone, 2-minute, everything you can possibly think of in a 25 to 30 to 35 play script. And that has helped me as much or more than anything that I've done.
Well, I don't think I've heard that type of approach before, and you know, we've talked to plenty of defensive coordinators here. I like it, though. It really makes sense, because when I think about, you know, from the opposite side, and Steven, I'll let you weigh in here on your thoughts as well, I'm gonna try to beat you with my couple best personnel groups, and you're right, some of those other things with those guys 3, 4, 5 and on down the line start to get situation related to how we're going to use those guys. So that does make a lot of sense to me, and I agree with you. Then, you know, the rest takes care of itself if you can do those kinds of things. And I've heard different variations of that, but I really like what you said about the purple ball, or what you learned from TCU, and essentially turning that into a practice for you as well. I think that's a great way to handle it. I always would simulate drives, but script them myself, I like that idea though of, you know, making me go out there and do what I would do on game day. But Steven, I'll let you weigh in your thoughts on that approach from the defensive side.
I mean, we were pretty similar in how we would you know, go about our game week prep. You know, typically we would break down our days, and you know, our game prep would work. You know, our Mondays we work our openers, our first down, our second down calls, our things to stay on schedule. You know, typically on the weekday we're or on the weekend during our breakdowns, we're taking a look at our film and our cutups, and you know, taking a look at first, you know, wave of film as we're looking through it. You know, we're really taking a look at, you know, does this film match up to what we're doing? And after we kind of cut things up and work things by formation and get our down and distances, we get a better idea of, you know, our tendencies that we'd be seeing from our opponents. And then that would help us kind of script our calls for the day. I wouldn't get to the purple stuff that, you know, that Vassal would be doing it with the purple wall, but, you know, we kind of script our calls versus the looks that we are anticipating again. Our Tuesdays, we're typically working through our scoring day. So we're typically looking at red zone goal line that day. So kind of the same deal as Vance was talking about. We typically wouldn't take a look at red zone and goal line in the film of that until about Tuesday, and I'd script it during the day. Wednesday's our third down conversion day. Take a look at all our third down looks. And then you know, our Thursday practice, when we go through, run through the game script, we'd work through all our other, you know, periphery situations and stuff that we wouldn't be able to get through the week.
Well, you guys had the opportunity to coach together and win a state championship at Sarah. When you look back on that season, what were the things that made that happen? And how did, I guess, having each of you, again, your relationship, working across from each other, other side of the ball, how did that play into what you guys were able to accomplish that year?
So, I mean, our relationship, our time at Sarah was, it felt like the state championship wasn't that season. It was we were together for 5 years, and it felt like it was the culmination of everything we did over a 5-year period. And it culminated in that final game. What's interesting about our situation, we worked for a legend, Patrick Walsh, who was in the De La Salle Hall of Fame. He was the captain of the team that started that legendary 151 game streak. I believe it was 151 games. He'll kill me if I get that wrong. But he was awesome. And so he played on the fact that Steven and I had that relationship. And so I planned all the practices. I wrote the script for all the practices. Steve and I would talk the night before, and I would create a skeleton, so to speak, of what he would tell me. Hey, I want this here. I want this many minutes. I want this many minutes. I would ask Patrick, what would you want for special teams? And we also ran, so we're a spread no huddle team. We also ran the double wing because that's what Patrick ran before we got there. And we retained it, and it was awesome. Any spread team, any spread coach, if you're listening, practice the double wing, put it in, practice it for 10 minutes a day. It will give you toughness. You won't believe how simple it is, and it's awesome. I probably shouldn't be saying that, giving away a little bit of secrets, but that's okay. That's what this podcast is here for. Anyway, so it was great because Patrick trusted us. And, I mean, you want to talk about, as an assistant, having a guy that completely trusts you and doesn't question you. In 5 years, he said one time, I don't like that call. Or, no, he goes, that's not my favorite call. I mean – you want to talk about working for a dream. I've had some great head coaches. I work for an amazing head coach now. Patrick was awesome. And we just kind of had a symbiotic relationship and with practicing. He'd say, I want this much special teams. I want this much for Raider. He would tell me what he want. I'd put it up on Dropbox, and then we would all download it and go our separate ways. And they were always civil, but like we were just always – I don't know. I've never been around a guy where we pretty much agreed on most everything. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but
no, I agree with that.
It just helps when you have a guy that you're totally in lockstep with, and it was completely natural. Like, and our head coach always supported us, whatever we needed, whatever we wanted. Obviously he set the tone and the vision for the team. And without him, we would not have been anywhere close to where we achieved. But in the engine room, putting the practices together, stuff like that, it's great to have a guy that's like, whatever you guys need, you take. You want more time? You think you need more time? I trust you. Take it. And so that allowed us to really get done whatever we needed to get done. And it's powerful. And all these other assistants were bought in. I mean, there was no, Patrick's number one rule was no adult drama. And so we had a great coaching staff. We would have disagreements on personnel and whatnot, but they were few and far between, and everybody was heading the same direction. And when you have a friendship and relationship like that, and plus Steven's a hell of a ball coach, like, it's great to have all this stuff, but P.S., you're one of the best offensive coordinators in the country. So, I mean, that just makes everything great. So.
Oh, yeah, to add to that, I would say, the constant communication throughout the week. I mean, we would, end most of our Sundays, with a conversation between basically, Patrick and the two coordinators. And, I think that was really important was we really talk about, okay, what's our game plan to really, to take care of the, business this week, from the offensive side, defensive side, special teams, from the whole, programmatic outlook. And we'd really hash out, okay, this is kind of what we need, from each side of the ball in order to, get the job done for this week. I think that's overlooked a lot of times because you take a look and you get locked in your game plan bubble and you kind of focus on your side of the ball. And, a lot of times you can miss, some overarching, principles and, themes for the week that, might be important for you to, get that little edge that you need. So I think it's just understand that, in the grand scheme of things, you're not just coordinating for your side of the ball, you're coordinating for W because that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't just pay that lip service. I mean, we shared. So we were platooned, but we would share guys and the plan that we had. And I think this just kind of worked out like that. I don't think it was like something we kind of stumbled upon. It was, we would put most of our really good DBs at running back or receivers spots. And so, like, especially the last year, our starting running back was our free safety. And so he'd spend 15 minutes with the offense in Indy, and then he'd send them over. And we always kept the team in mind. I would get a little bit more aggressive with personnel. And our head coach was at heart a defensive guy. So I kind of got what I wanted. So I know, it's a running joke at Sarah that I always got what I wanted. And I would remind Steve, who got in the job. I'm just kidding. And in all seriousness, though, we were always going in the same direction. Patrick always says the oars were always rowing in the same direction, and we always kept that. Yeah, I'd love this kid to be on defense, or I'd love this kid to be on offense, but we always looked at the overarching theme. And I think it helped. I think it helped that Steven was a head coach. At one point, I was too. I mean, if you want to call him being a semi-pro head coach to practice week, a head coach, sure, I'll take it. But at some point in our time, we all had to worry about the entire team, and I think that helped. And there was no egos. We just cared about me. We won games 14-2, and then we won a game, our regional, our second-to-last game together at Sarah. We won 76-43 or something like that. We didn't care, and we honestly didn't care. I mean, we would get bummed when we'd win and our side of the ball wouldn't play well, but just we're perfectionists. But, I mean, we really genuinely, truly put the team first in all that we did, and that helps.
Guys, I think that's a good example of just how you have to work together as a staff, because I know, in our era of personal brands – and always trying to promote yourself. You see that time and time again. It's certainly easy to get lost in this is what we got to do on our side of the ball. And I think you see that. I think you see some places, really at every level, get hurt by that kind of idea and not be on the same page. And I think you guys provide a great example of what being on the same page does for a staff.
I mean, as altruistic as I want to make it sound, I mean, at the end of the day, like, he's my best friend. So, like, it wasn't just that he was the offensive coordinator and this was the team and this is what I have to do because this is what you have to do to be a good assistant. Obviously, all those things came into play, but I wanted my really good friend to like be successful. And I think that also makes it easier. I think the problem in today's game with a lot of people, not beyond high school, but I think that's how staffs are put together. Well, I'm going to hire the best DC I can find and the best OC, and they don't think about how all the ingredients fit together. And they put together a staff that's segmented with a segmented mind. And then they're really surprised when that's the result. Wow, the offense doesn't care about the defense and the defense. Well, of course, because you didn't, when you put it all together, you didn't consider that. Patrick hired me. The funny part about this is Patrick hired me. He was courting me for a while. We both went for a job. We didn't get it. And we both went for the same job. It was one of these things where, like, if you get it, I'll be the assistant. If I get it, you'll be the assistant. But we would have worked together the same anyway. Well, we both didn't get the job. Patrick hired me. He'd been working on me for 6 months. And he's like, this is amazing. This is the best day in Sarah history, blah, 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 being all hyperbolic. And then his OC resigns 2 hours later. He had been wanting to retire, and he's like, well, you got your right-hand man now, so I can leave. And Patrick's like, oh, my God, this is awful. Like, I've been trying to get a DC for 6 months, and I just lost my OC, and I was like, don't panic. I know a guy. And this, you know, we had worked together at St. Francis, and he had been my D-line coach. So I was like, I know a guy, and got Steve in front of Patrick. And like everybody, Steve, you know, like everybody that comes across Steve, and Patrick was blown away. And so, I mean, we kind of came, we didn't come as a kind of, and so he never had to worry about, oh, well, the politics of the game. And so that's what makes it go, really, I think.
No, I mean, I definitely would agree with that. I mean, you're very conscious, you know, going in and when the other side of the ball, and you want to see them succeed. I mean, decisions that you make, calls that you make, I mean, you know, okay, do I want to go and take a shot if our defense is crushing it right now, if we're playing, you know, the field position game and doing well doing that, you know, maybe I need to be a little more conservative, or, you know, and vice versa. There's been times where, you know, Vass has, you know, gotten us the ball back quick, and we can go and take shots, and we can feed off each other because, you know, the guy behind you on the other side of the ball has your back. So, I mean, I think it's important for a staff to really have, you know, that type of cohesiveness, because, I mean, it trickles down. The kids see it. I mean, the kids see that we care about each other as coaches, and, you know, it trickles down to the players, and, you know, how your attitude and how, you know, your mindset you set in meetings and on the field, it echoes with the kids, you know, tenfold. And, you know, I can definitely say at Sarah, I mean, our time there, you know, we did create an environment where the kids did care about each other, and they play hard for each other because they don't want to see the guy next to them. You know, they want to see the best for him.
This next question is for Chris, in particular here. Chris, I'm wondering how, at our national conference in Florida, in Orlando, Florida, we have Tennessee's head coach there, and he brings up a high school coach from California. Can you connect the dots for me there as what, why Jeremy Pruitt is bringing you up in his talk?
I think it's because I bothered the crap out of him. No, well, that might be part of it. So last year, I'll make this story quick. I had a previous relationship to Steven going to Bosco with their defensive coordinator, kind of the Mutual Admiration Society. And I won't go into the backstory because I don't want to put any on blast. It has nothing to do with that. But a certain college canceled my visit. And I was pissed, and I was like, you know what? And Chris King, who's the DC at Bosco, said, why don't you come to Georgia with us? Well, it turns out that the co-DC at Georgia, now Glenn Schumann, and I had met 10 years ago at the national convention. And so I reached out to him. He's like, yeah, come on out. And my dad lives close to Athens. So I went. First night, we meet a guy who had known Pruitt, Coach Pruitt and Coach Scherer and all those guys, because they were like back at Hoover. And so his name is Pay Harrison. I owe him. He's at Elba High School in Elba, Alabama. So he gave Coach Pruitt's number, and I have no shame. It's admirable sometimes. And sometimes I look back and I go, ooh. So I got Coach Pruitt's number. And so Chris and I are travel buddies. And so he's the front man, and I'm the muscle. So I drop this in the places because nobody cares about me. Nobody cares about Tom Brady. Actually, that's not true. But, you know, nobody knows where Sarah is, but everybody knows Bosco. So I'm like, so my friend from Bosco, who also coaches at Bosco, and Bosco this, Bosco that, we want to come visit you. Coach Pruitt did know me, couldn't pick me up out of a lineup. I cold texted him, and he said, come on up. So Chris flew back to L.A. Then the next weekend flew back to Atlanta. I met him there, and then we drove up to Tennessee. They let us in, and it turns out that one of the coaches there was coached by Coach Walsh, who I'd mentioned earlier from Sarah when he was coaching at De La Salle. And I don't have any shame. So I texted Coach Pruitt, thank you very much. So this is in April. So I go back home to Florida every summer for about a month. And I decided I didn't get everything I wanted from Tennessee. So I bugged him again. He let me come up again. I drove up by myself. And I guess there's not many guys coming from California walking around, especially guys that visit twice in 1 year. And I think I was on Coach Pruitt's mind because I had texted him. I think he gave that speech on a Saturday. And I had texted him on that Thursday and was like, hey, coach, can we come again? And actually, after you texted me and told me that he mentioned me, I said, I haven't heard from you, but I heard you just referenced me in the national convention. And that means it's a yes. And he said, yes, yes, you can come again.
Well, that's great. Well, I'll tell you what, I love you guys being on the podcast and sharing this story. And just, I think, you know, the power of guys coming together, working together. What you were able to do there, win a state championship. I definitely would like to have both of you on. Chris, you to come on and talk some defense. Steven, come on and talk some offense. So if you'd like to, I'm definitely going to invite you back another time and talk some X's and O's.
I would love that. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
All right, guys. Well, you take care, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you.
Check out our new Twitter at FBDEV Coach. We're doing some great stuff there every single day. We're adding to it as we go through the off season here. We want it to be a great resource for coaches out there. Also, check out our systems at footballdevelopment.com if you are looking for some cutting-edge techniques. We put it together in our advanced tackling system as well as our contact system. I also highly recommend you checking out our system for building culture, and we partner with Focus 3 and Brian Kite, and Brian's done a phenomenal job in helping organizations around the country from corporate America to the education world to teams like Ohio State. If you read the book Above the Line, all of that book was about what Brian and his father Tim did to help out the Buckeyes. You could go get our system at usafootball.com/Focus 3.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.